Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey guys, just a quick message before you start listening to this podcast. Did you know that all of our Red Men Plus content also comes in podcast form? Not only do you get access to all the videos, you also get access to all of our podcasts too. They will download directly into your native app so you can get them on the go. So don't miss out on any more Red Men content. Sign up at redmenplus.com and like I say, get all of these amazing podcasts directly into your device. Right, I hope you enjoy this show.
Hey everyone. Welcome to the Red Men Podcast. Step into our nightmare, the water is warm. I'm Paul Machin, Ross Chanley, Chris Pajak. Join me in the studio for this one.
It's not been a great week.
It's not been a great month, Chris. Let's be perfectly honest on this. Our last win was in July. We did win a big 50p though, remember that?
Good times.
Great days.
Yeah, looked really good. Annoyingly,
Costas held it like an actual shield. It was,
if you're going to do it properly.
That's how you should be doing it. If you are live with us on YouTube, your boss, use the live comments, get involved with the chat.
What about if you're live with us on Twitter?
If you are live with us on Twitter, come and join with us over on YouTube and be boss. If you're listening after the fact, you're also awesome. You're just not as prompt.
We just have stuff to do.
Yeah. there's a chance you've got something really, you know, you've got a stable life, is what I'm saying. If you're not able to watch us on YouTube at half 10 in the morning on a random Wednesday, not anything wrong with any people watching. You're being naughty, is what I'm intimating there. Most of you are being naughty. Kickoff question. We'll get to it in a second. We're going to be discussing, of course, Liverpool United from Monday night. We're going to have a big old chat around all the possible causes and reasons why Liverpool have been shite. We're going to then later on look at the big week we've got looming ahead, and probably a little bit longer than a week to be perfectly honest, next 3 games, and what Liverpool choose to do or do not do in the transfer market between now and the end of the month. That is all to come. Avocado Dispenser at Jason Chester's 8 on Twitter did beg the question though, why is life so shit? Without getting too heavy into it, ultimately, when you're a football fan and you choose to commit so much of your life to that, to support of a football team, and that football team doesn't win football matches, life is more miserable. I've got no idea what it'd be like to support a team. I can't even begin to imagine being an Evertonian, as an example, because the balance of how much happiness you get to how much misery you get is wildly out of whack. Ours is the complete flip opposite.
But they're used to it.
Yeah, but I don't think you ever get used to misery. Maybe you do.
No, but you expect your expectancy levels are going, we won't win this game. When they do, it's actually a bonus for them. Whereas the opposite way of Liverpool don't win games.
Remember, staying up is better than winning a league title.
Yes, it's a good point. Yeah.
So what I'm trying to tell you...
You went there for the coach greetings when they were getting relegated saved them.
Yeah, but it's true though, isn't it? I know, we said this last week, you have that kind of dark cloud hanging over your head when Liverpool don't win, and now it's now getting, it becomes increasingly on top and on top and on top, and now I'm at the point where I don't know whether I'm a bit poorly, or have I not had enough sleep, or Liverpool just shite, and that's, there's a whole culmination of factors where you're just can't really be arsed.
I think we as fans feel pressure as well though, don't we? And we just alluded to the charity shield, that's, your hopes are up. It's we were amazing that game, you think, bloody hell, we're back, and you have that gap of football, and then I think people got to a certain point where they were ready for football to come back. I don't think others were, actually. I think because of the tight turnaround, because of the way the season ended last season, it was a bit like, I'll just give us another couple of weeks. But when you're ready for it and then you get your hope up and you want to play games of football and then you don't win them, and then every game is must win because of the standards that have been set by Liverpool and Man City. And then Man City by Haaland, everyone thinks he's going to bang in 6 goals a week and they're going to win every game, which quite clearly they're not going to. But that's what you have in your mind. When Liverpool don't win games of football, it's like, oh, sorry, we'll go again next week. But then you have to wait 8 days till the next one. And you have to wait 7 days till the next one. It's just like you can't put things right. Therefore, your whole week is miserable. And then you don't win those games. So then you're even more miserable.
It's also in a transfer. We're in a transfer window where there's always loads of misery around transfers.
But it's everyone's fears coming true.
Yeah.
That's, for me, what the crux of it is. It's like, you know, we've been sat here all summer long. Every one of us is at one point or another voiced the fact that we think that we need a midfielder. We didn't get one. We kind of made our peace with it because, you know, we're in FSG's pockets, apparently. But no, you make your peace with what the decisions that the club do and you get back on with supporting your side. But every one of us probably thought that we weren't going to be quite as good as we were last season because we've lost one of the top three players in the world in Sadio Mane and replaced him with a youngster who wasn't integrated into the system. And every one of us knew that this was going to be a title challenge from week one because it has been every single season. And when you go in with these massive expectations of a battle with Manchester City and you're 5 points behind them after 3 games and you're 7 points behind Arsenal after 3 games, then the fears that you've had for the really, really short summer break are all starting to come to you. Like, oh my God, what's going on here? We're not supposed to be this bad. Are we getting into a top four battle? What's going on? Klopp speaking out about, you know, needing a midfielder and all that type of stuff. And he did it in a very clever way, don't get me wrong, where he wasn't having a go at the owners. But that, again, just starts the conversation up. And you almost feel like you're just browbeating with it all, to be quite honest with you. It's just, there's no escaping
there's no resilience to it either, because, you know, and we're going to talk about a lot of the reasons why in a bit, but like, it's exhausting. It's been an exhausting few years supporting the club, and this is mad because this will fall on deaf ears to the fans of almost every other football team, by the way, and it's the entitlement that comes with it, with the kind of stuff you're saying, Ross. But that last season was just very, very tiring, mentally tiring, to have to go through. I had nothing left to give, and I was very. And when it ends with Paris, and like, I'm still not over that. Like, I mean, I feel very uncomfortable going around football matches again. I know we're going to talk a bit about your experience at United. We'll do that on Extra later on, but it's all that stuff. I'm not ready for the fight again. It's exacerbated when there's problems that are outside of your control. When Liverpool feel like they've got it handled, you can kind of go, okay, well, at least I feel knackered and I'm done in with it at all, but at least I can trust these guys have got it. But when it's not working, your mind is now filled with snakes, and those snakes are every single reason why this might not be working. And we're not too many seasons removed from a catastrophic injury hit season that totally derailed everything we were doing. We're already having that. It's like, that we were on top of the league after beating Spurs in the COVID season, and we were already decimated by injuries. We're like, okay, well, we might be able to make this work, and then all of a sudden it stopped working, and we couldn't figure out.
We were still second, weren't we, at the end of January or something, like, you know
mad.
What I mean?
It was mad, and now it feels like we have one game this time instead of like half a season.
You go into the season almost like a full tank of petrol, diesel, whatever, gas is probably what most people would say in that.
Fuel.
Yeah, in that one. But like, it feels like at the moment, winds are just throwing a fiver into your tank and seeing how far you can go from that. You're sort of running on empty type of thing, and just a little top up. I just need a win to get me to next week, just if that's all right.
Banging a neutral roll down the hill for a bit.
I sat there till 2:30 in the morning when I got home after Manchester United, not doing anything. Just sat there going, oh, for fuck's sakes, basically. Yeah. Like, what's going on? I'm just staring at a wall. Like, it's pathetic.
Yeah.
But this is what the football club's done to me.
Everything you just said there might be the same for the players as well, though. Are they mentally drained? I'll come on to this later, but they might be mentally drained from last season as well, and just fucked from the hangover. I know we had the parade, and I think it was good for all of us, to be honest, and the players came out and said it. I felt fucking loads better for going to that afterwards. But like, we talk about the turnaround for us, and you know, I think regardless of what you get paid, like, they got run into the ground last season, like 50 odd games,
63, wasn't it?
Yeah, collectively, they played a lot of football. When you do that and you don't win, then you get off to a bad start, and you know, similar to the defence injury season, of just turn up to work every day and go, oh, he's injured, by the way, can you just can you just go again for us? Because that's the situation we're getting to now. And those fears that you're talking about now, there doesn't seem to be anything to say like, oh, it's all right, we got through like Man United game, but Cater's back on Saturday or Ox is back on Saturday. You know what I mean? There's none of that. It's the other way. It's like, well, is Milner going to be all right for Saturday? Is Henderson going to be all right for Saturday?
Jota had a reoccurrence of an injury about a month and a half ago, and we've not heard anything about where he's up to. It's proper scary.
Me and Ross did this post-match. We were going through it, going, when's Canate back? Anyone know even how long he's out? I don't really proper. I know
Kurt Jones had a little something.
Kurt Jones still stressing. This little club mentioned that. You know, there's no clear timeline on that. Still no. It was a slightly clearer timeline on Thiago, but you know, is that still a month away? Is that now 3 weeks away or 2 weeks away from that? We don't know because it was a month to 6 weeks. It was being that was the chat.
6 weeks
that.
Is 10 games.
Yeah.
Yes,
it was. Well, maybe there was about nine, weren't they? Like at the time. Again, as you say, Jota, no idea where Jota's up to at all in that regard. And I mean, if you just they're massive. They're all that's, you know, Canate was basically, there's a chance Canate was our best centre half by the, well, he was, but you know, he's our best player in the Champions League final. He'd be starting games of football for us. Obviously Thiago's playing games in midfield for Liverpool because we'll be doing that. And Diogo Jota is in our best front three without a doubt. And yeah, just as you say, at the moment it just feels like you're more likely to hear someone else's out. And there's the Naby stuff. We'll talk about that in a bit as well. But, right, we're gonna come on to talk about the United game in a second. I just want to do something which is not football-related, but obviously most people will have seen it. It's been national news. A young girl, Olivia Pratt Corbell, was basically shot to death in her house by an unknown person. It happens literally two streets over from my house. It's on the same road that my brother-in-law lives, you know, like literally walking distance from where four children in my family were sleeping as well. They're basically asking for more information. Somewhere, someone out there knows more about this. Harry Doyle, who's a local representative for the Notty Ash area, said our community must come together and share any information you may have. You can report anonymously via @CrimeStoppersUK on 0800 555 111. So if anyone knows anything about that, please do get in touch because we need to find whoever was responsible for all that and make sure that they're brought to justice, because it's like genuinely beyond horrifying than a nine-year-old kid, that anyone should have to face down this kind of situation. But even worse, that people think they can get away with it as well. Someone somewhere out there in the city of Liverpool knows something, and the more people who can give more information, hopefully that can have some sort of justice. Never going to bring it back, but that's where we're at.
Bigger grass.
Yeah, it's not an Aberdeen either. Yeah, just on the point.
It's a nine-year-old kid.
Grass,
that died.
And honestly, I know we've got the beer grass, don't be a grass culture. Like, I mean, I tell my kids, don't be a grass. But if there's a kid dead, it's not about grass, and this is not about getting your mates into trouble. This is about someone who's gone beyond too far. If you know parents, family members, if someone in your family did that, I know there's a loyalty to family, but it goes beyond that. The grassing thing is just fucking it's immaturity in something that is very much not a situation that requires that. Anyway, right, okay, very short break from us, then we're going to talk about Man United Liverpool to lift the mood.
Yippee.
Hello everyone, thanks so much for tuning in. While I've got you here for a minute, let me tell you about Red Men Plus, our amazing subscription service dedicated to all things Liverpool. Over on Red Men Plus, you will get access to the best premium content, including more podcasts that you'll enjoy. You'll get access to exclusive merch discounts, and you'll even get access to our very own Discord server and Facebook group. There's so much more to offer. To find out more, head over to www.redmenplus.com and get your subscription. Nice one, and let's get back to the show.
Oh God! Right, United 2, Liverpool 1. Just the problem with this, Chris, is that there's a very skewed narrative around Manchester United at the moment. And look, there's no escaping the fact that we have been literally laughing our asses off at United now for months and months and months and months and months, years even. They are and have been shite, but there's no world in which you should ever expect to go to Old Trafford and win, even when Liverpool are brilliant and they're supposedly shite. There's a reason we don't win lots at Old Trafford, and there's something about, you know, it's the reason why teams don't come to Anfield and win very much. It's a place that's very hard to go and win football matches.
Yeah, it is, but I don't care about that. I don't care about, you know, what the result per se is. I care about the performance.
Yeah.
And it lacked in every sense of the word. Like, there was no fight. It's like, if you want to win at Old Trafford, the first thing you've got to do is fight for everything. Yeah. And that just didn't happen on Monday night. It was terrible for me from start to finish. You know, the void of ideas, the void of application. It just, we were outthought. It was a joke across the pitch. Like, and to be honest with you, changes should have happened at half time.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was glaringly obvious. And when the change is made, it was kind of baffling, to be honest with you, that, like, James Milner stayed on the pitch.
Yeah.
And Fabinho was the one. And Fabinho was the one that was going to come on. Everyone knew that. But the fact that James Milner stayed on for a few more minutes was a bit baffling to me. And that's all I expect from Liverpool. I go to support the side and to watch them do everything they can to get a victory, and they didn't do that, and that's not part of what being a supporter and a football team is for me. We give everything we've got for you, you give everything you've got for us, and there was only one side of that on Monday night.
Yeah, I obviously it's a different vibe when you're watching it, I guess, at home or whatever, but I don't think, I'm not going to sit here and defend the performance, and God knows we talked about it enough on the night itself. Ross, it's been enough time that I can look at it and say there were enough positives, there were bits and pieces of positives of it, but I agree, and it goes past this point of, I don't understand some of the decisions, I don't understand some of the tactics, I don't understand why Mo Salah's so far away from the box when he's the only guy we know who's going to score a goal for us, and it's telling that both of the goals he scored this season in the league for us have come within the proximity of the 6-yard box, whereas the vast majority of his play is being done on the right wing. I don't know. My only thing on this, there's more going on, and it's stuff that we're not privy to, but the Jordan Henderson, because I totally agree with Chris, and we said this at the time, it's mad that Milner stays on. But why? I don't. You know, there has to be reasons behind it, and I can only surmise. It's literally, we're in this awkward situation now, and this is my problem with needing a win at Old Trafford, when we're in the midst of an injury crisis. Is we're having to protect ourselves for the next game and the next game, which sounds fucking stupid.
Yep.
Because we need to get a win, but that can be my only, that's the only reason that I can think there, because I don't see why you'd take Jordan, you'd take your captain off when you're trying to fight to get a win.
Yeah.
Get a point, actually, no, from the game.
But I think it could have been a number of people on occasion. You just said that the whole performance was terrible, but I think you look at the options on the bench, I think he would have made five changes if he had the amount of people to make those changes at half time. That's not been for the first time this season. He spoke about James Milner after the game, and I think it was in defence of the first goal, when he's obviously bollocking Virgil van Dijk, and he said, you know, there wasn't a lot of support there, but I saw Millie try. So maybe that's got him some credit in the bank, and that's maybe why he stayed on. I don't know, I'm just surmising why he might have done. But what you said to me before the game started, I was feeling about the game, and I said I wanted Liverpool to start the game properly, and I'm sick of going in behind. And there's no in-game management for any of those players. Okay, Milner's bollocking Virgil van Dijk, but I'm seeing a rinse repeat of Liverpool going behind the goal early before they ever kick up the arse, or getting in at half time and needing some words from Jurgen Klopp before they start a game of football. That shouldn't be the case. You know, and at least learn from your mistakes. I reference it to Fulham. The crowd were up, they were all over us. Keep hold of the ball for 5 minutes. Do what you said. Win the ball, be a prick. You know, some just like slow the game down. Don't try and go toe for toe when you're being overrun and you can't control the game of football.
We did, bro, in a very general, albeit much lower sense than expected, we did the right thing. Man United are all over us, and they got the ball back, and they took possession of it, and they dominated the ball. But it felt like, we were saying this, Chris, I don't know whether you agree, it felt like Liverpool were winging it. There's nothing that felt practiced about how we played when we had the ball. It all felt
three games this season.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like, we'll try this and see if it works.
Yeah, there is. I said this after the game in my post match, is that, you know, we're struggling to score goals. We're devoid of ideas in the final third at the moment. And, you know, for me, I look at it and I'm like, people will point to the positives of loads more possession and more shots. Manchester United allowed us that possession. Like, any team, the way Man United were playing, could have kept the ball against them. That's not an issue. Not for an issue for a side like us. They let us have the ball, and then they said you're not getting into the penalty area loads, and that's kind of what they did. And every team's playing us like that at the moment. It's the soft underbelly, to be honest with you. In three games this season, we've conceded a penalty from one pass from winning the ball back on one pass. We've conceded a goal against Crystal Palace from winning the ball back one pass through, and we conceded a goal against Manchester United losing the ball, Hendo in the middle, one pass through, one goal.
And the Elanga chance when he hits the post is exactly the same.
Exactly the same. And it's the same every week at the moment, and that needs to be rectified and changed ASAP. But when we've got the ball, we've got to do more with it.
Yeah.
We've changed, haven't we, I think, back in the last season to accommodate Luis Diaz and his style of play. We've moved Mo Salah out and got chalk on his boots. And I like him out there, to be quite honest with you. I think he's a more impactful player when he's out there in terms of all-round gameplay. Doesn't get as many goals, granted, so it's up and down there. Luis Diaz on the other side. And it kind of felt like we were evolving to have a forward because we knew maybe that a big sort of target man style Nunes centre forward, maybe I'm doing a disservice calling him a target man there, but someone to run onto things as well, is going to be fit into this side. So get the wingers ready for that, change the way that they're playing. But what we need to do, and this is all down to fullbacks as well, they're coming inside a little bit more. We've all spoken about Trent coming inside. That allows more space for the wingers to play on the wings, but we need a different type of midfield to be able to work with that. And what we've been left with because of injuries, and ultimately because Thiago is injured, is there's no one in there with a bit of craftsmanship who's going to be able to feed the ball. And now we haven't even got the striker to do it to anyway.
It was telling how much better we were when we started trusting Harvey, and he started trusting himself in the second half, because he's that. He'll sit between the lines and he'll turn the ball around and he'll move forward.
We need someone with craft who can play the ball forward and get someone onto. But Bobby Firmino doesn't help. And if you're going to play Bobby Firmino and Mo Salah, play them the normal way.
But he's being told, but that's the Bobby Firmino thought I find mad, because that was a very Bobby from 2 years ago. Bobby performance where he's not in the game, he wants to be in the game, so he's going to drift, he's going to drop deep and he's going to get on the ball and just get himself some touches and look to make things happen. That he must be getting instructed to do that, because that's not how he was playing it last season, and that's not how our number nine was playing last season at all. Our number nine was being asked to basically be more of a number nine. There's a reason why Jota has had such good success in that role. Bobby Firmino's goals to minutes ratio last season, albeit he didn't play a lot, was better than it's been since 17-18, because he was being told, it's fine, mate, do your bit and pieces here, but ultimately get on the end of stuff in the box. So it, the whole thing just feels
it worked once. It worked once when I think Bobby Firmino drops deep, plays it out wide maybe, and then the ball's, I think it was to Trent, and then Trent plays it back into Bobby and he lays it back 5 yards to Salah, and Martinez maybe gets down for a block or something like that. That was the one time when I felt that it clicked and it looked like, oh, that's what we're supposed to be doing, but we didn't do it again.
It's like, but this is the thing about Bobby Firmino, and it's a bit like he's gone, okay, here we go again, I'm going to drop off here, I'm going to pull defenders, and defenders are going, yeah, you're Bobby Firmino, mate, we know, we'll just stay here, thanks. We're just going to stay in.
But the difference is, Paul, it's okay dropping deep, but what used to happen?
People would fill the space.
Exactly, and that's not happening.
And Diaz doesn't do that, which is definitely one of his issues. No, I agree.
I don't think he would have or should have started that game if there'd been other options on the bench. Obviously, Jota and Nunes obviously doesn't help the situation, but we were having a chat about this before you did the start 11 show, and I think I put Salah in the middle and Elliot on the right, which is just the best of a bad job at the minute. But Bobby was coming back from an injury, so I don't know if he's been forced to play that game of football when he's not completely match ready or match fit. I'm not trying to defend him for his performance, but it just makes you think of, like, should he have played that game? I think he's certain games of football, and that one isn't it.
Yeah, well, look, but that's my thing on this. That 11 can win a game of football against any football team, you know, because you can engineer a win. But I don't think we tried to engineer a win there. I think, and it's just to pick up on a thread from what you were saying there, Chris, I think we've taken a gamble here, and that gamble is stick with how we're going to play when we've got everyone fit. And, you know, so Nunes will be back in two games, and Jota will hopefully be back in a handful of games after that, and both of them allow us to broadly say play the same way, because they're going to play as proper number nines. And there's more value in us and having everyone else learn how to play a slightly different way. It sounds mad at the time. It feels mad right now. It's like when we had in 2021, when everyone was injured, and we had that spell of games where they were probably just hoping it would all work.
So it's exactly the same.
We kept with the same thing. And eventually we just went, right, fuck it. We're going to have to change our approach. We put the two slow centre halves.
That's the thing that's pissing me off, is that he'd been through this before.
Yeah.
And, you know, we changed it and we dropped a little bit deeper with Nat Phillips and Reece Williams, and we changed the way that we play football because we had to win games of footy. And it feels like that's what we need to do now. You know, and we haven't got 10 games to be able to work that out.
Yeah.
He's got to make that decision quickly, and he's got to change how we're playing because we're stuck between two formations and two styles of play, and we're not doing any of them well.
Yeah, and this is why I'm appreciative of the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea on this, because if we want to win the league, and that sounds like a ludicrous statement to say, having not won a game in the first three, then we've got to make that way work and work, because that's clearly how they feel is the best way for us to challenge Man City. You can afford to change your style and be less dominant and do all that when you're fighting for top four, because the margin for error is so much bigger. You don't need to win as many games of football. You can draw more games, etc., etc. Ultimately, it's well easier for us to finish in the top four. And maybe that's a little bit of that. Either A, they know more than we do about the return of certain footballers, and they think it's fine. It's better us taking a bit of a gamble for a couple of weeks for the long-term gains of it all. Or they're thinking, well, we've still got a room here where we've got a couple of games before we can. If we have to change it, we'll change it in a week or two's time. And we're giving up on the league, but we know the top four is we can probably piss top four no matter what we do, because if we can get third in the way that we did, then stands to reason that we'd be all right. But I don't know, but from the outside looking in, it looks mad. It just looks like everything's wrong. And the Endeavour have got there's a lot of people commenting about it. In fact, let me see if I can find the comments. Scott Hawks, regular super chatter, with another one there saying, I have a couple of hospital stays in September and I'm looking forward to the anaesthetic. Stop me thinking about Trent not being arsed to chase back after losing the ball. What the fuck's going on? I've seen a lot of this, and this is one of the things I had to defend on a show I did for another channel yesterday. Someone who doesn't support Liverpool very vehemently having a strong opinion about Trent's defensive things. And it is impossible to defend Trent when you see that clip where... It's their first goal. Yeah. And he's jogging back, he's walking, stops. Yeah, it's very difficult to make a defence of any player when they're like that. It's just, you go, it's double exacerbated by, I don't think it's helped by that clip of Mbappe the other week where he's running down the left wing, he doesn't get the ball, and then he just stops and turns around. I think people are on the lookout for footballers switching off.
There's a couple of different ones with Trent. That's unforgivable for their Sancho goal. Completely unforgivable. He switches off first of all to let Alanga in, maybe, on the 1-2. Mm-hmm. And then he's running inside, and you've covered that. But there's another one for the other goal where he basically is on the halfway line and doesn't run back. That's defensible for me. And I'm giving both sides the argument, because I thought Trent was terrible, by the way. But there is a reason sometimes that he turns and doesn't run back. When he's 20 yards behind play anyway, there's no point for a start. And if Alisson saves it, he's got a quick pass and we're on the attack. Mm-hmm. So there are two things going on here.
Provided someone from the midfield does that job for him.
Yeah, sometimes you're okay with that. But other times, when you're in a defensive position, you fucking defend.
Yeah.
That's why the first goal is unforgivable for me.
I do. You're right. And I think there's an attitude thing at the moment where we do, it feels, we're playing like we're a brilliant team, which is sound, but you've got to rebuild the foundations now. That's not just going to happen for you. We've got to put, you're right, it's got to be built back again on the graft. And this, it's just mad. I mean, we said this after Fulham. It's like, well, what are the odds that five world-class footballers have an off day? Well, now it wasn't as bad against Palace, of course, but it'll feel it. And it's going to get lumped in just as much. Always the performance was better, and obviously again 10 men doesn't help, but also does, but whatever. But now it's like Virgil van Dijk hasn't had a good game this season. Trent has had some good moments. I thought, like, second half against Palace, I thought he was really good, but other than that, Jordan Henderson, maybe second half against Fulham, he's good when he comes off the bench against Palace, but he hasn't put a really strong showing in. Bobby Firmino has been crap this season.
Fabinho's
been crap this season. Diaz is up again, 35 minutes against Crystal Palace when he's really, really turned it on and looked at danger. He's had little bits of fits and starts around that. Salah has minimal impact on the games, but at least he's stuck the ball in the back of the net a few times. I've seen a few people saying Robertson looks knackered. I think Robertson's actually been okay, but it's hard to tell because His role has changed with Diaz being in front of him as well, and of course with the left side of midfielder being different since then. It's mad. I don't really know.
When you think on the flip side of what Manchester United have been through so far this season, you mentioned like, laughing at them for months and stuff, but losing to Brighton and then getting battered by Brentford, they haven't played well this season either. So everything you said before about what was bad about our performance, they were the complete opposite. Now, if they can be crap and then have all the outside murmurings going on of all the protests and stuff that's going on, how come they can turn up for that game? Because they're properly motivated. Like, they were organised. You said there, they wanted the ball more. There was loads of 50-50s that we just shout off. And maybe in the back of their mind, they're going, well, I can't get injured. Otherwise we're fucked. I shouldn't have that. But maybe just in the back of their mind, they're going, you know, that Gomez 50-50 I mentioned with Bruno Fernandes. Bruno Fernandes wanted that fucking ball more than Joe Gomez did. Yeah. And it was a dangerous position. And he's the last man and whatever else. Fucking take him out.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, look, I said this at the time. Bruno Fernandes goes in full stretch, slidey. You've got to go. Joe Gomez has got to match him doing that. Is the only solution, because I don't think he's favoured to it. But again, by the by, I agree with the point. Is that that's the psychology, the dangerous psychology of where we're at now? Of am I next? Is that I must be running through the minds of a lot of these players. What happens if I get injured? Virgil van Dijk, again, you know, he must be terrified because we touched upon it. There's a World Cup as well in a couple of months, and he must be, and there'll be players in there thinking, wouldn't mind going to a World Cup. And not only am I going to
put the performances in,
so you exactly.
Get the merit to be there.
No, but that's what I mean. That's what they, but there's all of this stuff. Liverpool have got. I don't think talking about witches at the training ground is a particularly sensible approach from the manager at this either, because you're just putting ideas in people's heads. You know, it's not about you're saying that something from out of nowhere is going to come and strike you down. That's a very uncomfortable way to feel and live your life, because it implies it's out of your control. Don't let football players know that the things are out of their control, because all of a sudden it will be like, it's just a weird mentality to have. You're right, it looks like a bunch of lads. I mean, this, where we're at now, there's too many players for whom if they get injured now, we're fucked. If Sen gets an injury, we're fucked. If Virgil gets an injury, we're fucked.
We've not got adequate cover for them.
But that's an injury thing, isn't it?
No.
Well, it is, because we bought a right back.
We don't know how good he is.
No, I know. But to the point, we literally bought a right back.
The other solution to that was Gomez or Milner, but we can't use them because we don't have a midfield.
Exactly. Back, so, yeah. And moreover, that's what I mean. That's where we're at. If we've got one more midfielder left in terms of being able to actually put a midfield, a legitimate senior midfield out. Yep. And that we're not far off the point where Fabio Carvalho, who looked very impressive in his little cameos, is not a Liverpool midfielder, not yet. You know, not for what is required to play in Liverpool's midfield. That is a Hail Mary. I've seen a lot of this, like, just throw the kids in midfield. Cool. But if we get absolutely dicked everywhere doing that, you've ruined them. And it was, you know, that's not how it works. That's what you do when you're in a fucking relegation fight and you're panicking. Liverpool won't do that. But we're all just looking over at the board here. But this is the point. If either Van Dijk or Gomez pick up an injury now, it's Nat Phillips starting centre half for us. If Trent gets an injury,
which has already happened.
Yeah, exactly. If Trent gets injured, so Milner's then moving to right back, who at 36 years old, it's not even about his quality, because I will die on this hill forever. James Milner can come in and play any isolated game of football or drop in any isolated 30 minutes of football for you and do an absolutely sterling job. But no, he can't do. He won't be able to even do five games back to back, because the last time we tried to do that was in the COVID season, and he played two and got injured because his body won't. I'm certain of it. Won't allow him to do that. And then you're fucked. You know. So I can appreciate the mentality of the footballers could be impacted by
the mentality. Listen, we're quite right to talk about it, but you know, they've got to pick up what they do with the ball as well. Yeah. It's like, you can't just blame the mentality when, you know, there was a pass from Alisson to Robbo.
Elliot, and he booted at him.
And it basically ended up going to someone's head, and we ended up conceding a throw and out of it.
Was it Elliot?
And you're what the fuck? Yeah. What was the aim of this pass? Because you've hit it at head height to someone who's on the touchline. Yeah. I've got no idea what's going on there. Yeah. There was loads of Virgil van Dijk, poor passing. Joe Gomez knocked the ball out a couple of times when he's trying to play the ball to centre really Alexander Arnold. But these two passes weren't. Yeah. And you give the ball away and you're under pressure. So it's great having 87% passing accuracy or whatever it is on the day. But if the ones that you fuck up cause problems, then you've caused problems. And every single player was in the same boat on Monday night. No one did anything cutthroat. No one did anything where you think, wow, that was absolutely brilliant. The big switches from Virgil van Dijk, where have they gone?
Yeah.
Why is Henderson taking the ball off Virgil van Dijk? We ended this 3-4 years ago, by the way. Yeah. We stopped doing that. Henderson's a good six when he doesn't take the ball off van Dijk's feet, because van Dijk can play those passes. Yeah. Why have we gone back to this safety net? Why are we using like a frigging Hendo dummy?
Well, you know why? What I mean? It's, you know, crazy. Why that is? That's nothing to do with that. That's nothing to do with Virgil's ability. That's Jordan Henderson trying to grab the game, and that's in how he do. He
and we don't need that.
No, I know exactly. But that's him reverting to type. That's his way of going, I'm going to go and sort this out. Give me the ball,
and then I'll pass it to Joe Gomez.
Well, yeah. But that's just
it's infuriating. It's not just mentally how they're at. It's what they're actually doing on the pitch is not good enough.
And again, the cutthroat thing comes, this is the problem. We're trusting a 19 year old kid to come good, or 2 19 year old kids to come good for us to do this, and we're well better for having Elliot and Carvalho. I would contend this. I don't know how you make this work, even if it's like, if Firmino, if we haven't got anyone else back fit, maybe try Carvalho in the 9 or whatever, just so you can have him and Elliot link up a little bit, because I think there's clearly something between those two lads. But that's what you need bravery, and that's the X factor in the cutthroat thing came from Elliot. He picked the ball up, he turns towards goal, and he's looking. He's like, who can I pass this ball to? When we started trusting the people in the attack to take awkward passes, we were much better for it. All of our best moments in that game came, and it was throughout the game, it wasn't just in that final spell when we were chasing it. All of our best football came where we just went, right, just batter it into feet, let it stick, see what happens. Good times where, and then it allows Andy Robertson to get a little bit of space on the left-hand side. A couple of times he got into really good areas there and gets cut back. It's just, it just feels...
Last season we had goals, like as in pre-planned movements for goals to create. I don't think we've got anything at the moment, and that's sort of what you said at the start of the show, isn't it? It's like Liverpool don't have a pattern of play right now that's recognisable to me. Mm-hmm. And that's really strange 3 games into a season where you can't really tell what the plan is, because every team, and Real Madrid did this in the Champions League, are going to sit back, and no matter how good the team is, they're going to sit back and nullify our press because they're not looking to play the ball out.
And also, again, this is the detriment of the midfield thing, and where this is the imperceptible thing about who we choose to use in midfield. Our defensive system works because our midfield needs to be cutting the passes out. It's dead easy to score against Liverpool when you don't press right. So it looks like it's all the defence's fault, and it is very simple. It's not very simple, but the most simple things are often the things
it's
that
two
are
very quick most. Passes and a release.
So you brought this up at half time, and you get up there is James Milner's heat map. Mm-hmm. From the game on Saturday, and something we discussed on a final word yesterday. I was talking to you about it before, but all that stuff you were talking about before, about that one pass and you're straight through, you take a look at James Milner's heat map, he's literally everywhere on that pitch. How can you have a midfield structure and expect the six to do the job? And I think Steve Plunkett said this a few times, of like people slating Fabinho and his role, he still needs those 2 8s in front of him at times to give him some support what's in front of him, because you can't mark 3 players that are in midfield and do it by yourself. So that's where the one pass is coming through. I quite admire James Milner for like being the extra runner in the 8 and getting
it's
into
not
the
very big it, but it, we can it, get it up on screen if you're watching on YouTube. James Milner's heat map is absolutely berserk. It's literally, I mean, he couldn't have covered, it basically covers every position apart from left back and right back.
So on one angle, that's admirable. On the other side, that's just utter chaos. How can you be all over the pitch?
But James Milner's having this fucking free hit season where he's going, right, I'll do whatever. You know what I mean? So we need lads to get in the box. Go on, I'll go and get in the box. He's not very good at it, but he'll go and get himself.
And that's fine at certain times, but you can't do it throughout the whole game. And when you're getting punished and punished with the one pass thing, like that's where the in-game management comes in. It's like, let's stop for 5 minutes and support the midfield and the defence and get hold of the ball.
I agree with your points, but just to add a little bit of nuance to a heat map, it's touches of the ball that it's based upon. And so Liverpool had 70% of the ball. And so obviously, as you move to the right-hand side, if you're playing on the left, you can press to the right-hand side. So a lot of that is just natural movement here and there, just as an understanding of what a heat map shows.
Touches the ball in the final third, and then we lose the ball because we're being pressed all the time. Then where is he?
You can't possibly tell when we've lost the ball, is what I'm trying to say. There is a bit of nuance. There's more to the fact that...
Yeah, but yeah, to the point, in possession, James Milner...
I don't disagree with the point, I'm just saying.
James Milner is is being our every man for every occasion at any given position.
That's not discipline to me. It's admirable, but when you're losing games of football constantly,
yeah, it's just you could do with someone doing that who's as we've had plenty of people have said, who's 25 years old and has got a great eye for goal or whatever. You know, if Curtis Jones is doing that a bit more, I'm a little bit more encouraged by it. Yeah. Or if Harvey's doing that, I'm actually not. I'm less concerned about it.
Or was he there because Firmino was in his position for most of the game?
Yeah, well, there certainly is a bit of that.
yeah, that's probably why. Yeah. We had an extra midfielder in our number 9.
But we've said this before. I mean, I thought Klopp was kind of answered this because we're in a situation now where there is no solution, really. It's got to be worked out by whoever we've got. And it's tactical, not wild shifts. Because he said, we go to 4-2-3-1. But we haven't got any other forwards. And you could say, well, we have, because Carvalho comes on. But then what? So we start, let's say, for example, we start Fabinho and Henderson in a two, and you start Carvalho, Elliot, Diaz and Salah, or whatever up front. Then that means there's Firmino just there. Or you put Firmino in for whatever. It's not much better, is it? You know what I mean? No. It's not leaving.
The only way you can, it might solidify the defence a bit more, is what I'm thinking of it. Because, you know, you look at what Trent Alexander-Arnold was done, and every team is going to play into that space behind Trent. Well, all right, it's not working at the moment. Don't give him the space.
Yeah.
it's somebody you've got to change. Because he's not creating.
Yeah.
If
you're going to play Harvey Elliott, I think on the right of the three, and you're still concerned about the Trent thing being in there, I don't really want Harvey Elliott dropping into cover, and maybe that's a little bit of the issue with Milner being all over the place. Is the biggest issue we've got is Harvey Elliott should be starting right of the three for us. I think he's a terrific little footballer, but what else happens after that? It hamstrings us in our choices because at the minute, all three of our first choice options for the left side of midfield are all injured. Thiago, Keita and Jones are all out, so you then Milner is fourth choice for that role, which is okay, but you want Henderson in the team because you could really do with Jordan Henderson in the team. Because let's be honest, would you rather have Jordan Henderson in the team or James Milner in the team? Well, yeah, it's Jordan Henderson, but I've yet to see any evidence of him playing well on the left of a three, and it's been minimal evidence on that. So he might be brilliant at it, but also we seem a bit reticent to try it again as well. Fabinho needs to play, but Fabinho's in crap form.
Do this with a 4-2-3-1. Is it the same situation on Monday night? If the game's not going your way, what are you doing to change it? Mm-hmm. And then you're in danger of running Henderson and Fabinho, you 2-6s into the ground, as you just said.
It's all Darwin Nunez's fault, this, let's be perfectly honest. If he just fucking not got sent off, at least we'd be able to have a more reasonable idea and all this. But this is, you know, this is like, Chris, it's, do you remember again in 2021 where we get to the end of January, February, and the media are just really bored of talking about how many injuries Liverpool have got? So they start going things like, this is just the end of this team now. This is just the end of the Liverpool cycle. I've seen it already. It's the end of the Liverpool cycle. And listen, it might be. I don't know. You don't know. But I don't know. It's weird. It feels a lot like that again, except, you know, at least we had half a season of being good that time around. It's just, I think the injuries are an acceptable thing to discuss, but it's exacerbated by we had enough players to beat Fulham, and we didn't. And when you don't beat Fulham and then you go to Crystal Palace and you don't beat Crystal Palace, you're now at United where you've got no players left and you've not won a game of football. So everything is now on top, and now everything is being hyper scrutinised on top of, because again, how do we fix it? You can't make it. You can't make sweeping changes to the people on the pitch.
I think I'm going to use the front three as an example here, right? I think I'll ask you both a question first. I think I know the answer, but I'll ask it. Is Bobby Firmino at his peak now?
No.
Is Mo Salah at his peak now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. When our front three were at their absolute best, Sadio Mane, Bobby Firmino, Salah, do you think all three of them were at the peak?
Probably.
Yeah. So let's use a little bit of FIFA-isms, and I think this is what like the green stuff around your front three means and stuff. Is it like how well they gel together and stuff like that, right? Have we got that with our front three now?
No.
And two of our front three probably aren't at their absolute peak of their powers. Without chemistry, no Mane, two lads not at the peak of the powers. One of the lads right now in a Liverpool seat hasn't scored goals.
Yeah.
One of the lads doesn't score goals. And one of the lads is playing wide and not, you know, and not being as impactful as he could be in games. Like, there's one unit. Right, so we've said our front three are playing nowhere near good enough right now, and they're not at the peak powers anyway, and they haven't got the chemistry that made those 90, 95, 100% players 110%, because the three of them work brilliantly together. You've got a midfield three from the other night that's not very good, quite honestly. You know, Henderson in the six, Milner on the left-hand side, Elliott. There's no chemistry there. It's, you know, Henderson's played an eight for most of the last 3 years. Played well in the six, don't get me wrong, but he's been put in because Fabinho's not in good form. Milner's not been at his peak for 5 years, even though he's a good squad player. And you've got a centre-back pairing that hasn't played together for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you've got a lad in Trent Alexander-Arnold who doesn't look in good form.
Yeah.
And it's a debatable on Robertson from everyone I've spoken to. I think he's actually played quite well. You said that.
Yeah.
Right, so I've just run through the entire team and we're wondering why we're having problems.
Yeah. No, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly that. And I say there's just no scope for change, which is the thing in this world, you know. And we're left with now, that's my point. I was going, trust 2 19-year-olds. Do not. I mean, look, if they do, and it might be the springboard that kicks them on, but from 30 years of watching football, if you have to put all your faith in 19-year-olds, you'll get a short burst, but you'll fucking ruin them for the years that follow.
Anyway, we discussed the fixtures before. What is it? Bournemouth on Saturday, Newcastle Wednesday, Everton Saturday, and then you're in Champions League games that following from the Everton game, and then you got a weekend game. It's two games a week for 3 months.
Yeah. No, it's true. As I say, there's a million possible causes in this, and that's the thing. There's a lot of like deep think going on, and I'm seeing a lot of individual things, and I just started to list them just as a bit of an exercise for a video I might do on my channel on Thursday, of like listing every one of my fears of why Liverpool are going to fall apart this season or whatever, and there's bazillions of them. I've seen, you know, in the comments are filled with them already. It's like, didn't buy a midfielder, it's Mo Salah's, did Mo Salah getting a new contract to upset
disrupt the squad,
you know what I mean? And they're just two tiny ones, and everyone's got their own hot take on why Liverpool aren't doing really well. None of us
Virgil
know the answer
not
to this.
Being informed is not helping.
Yeah,
bloody exactly. Hell,
yeah.
And again, he didn't clap the fans. He just walked straight off the pitch.
He's fucking, yeah, yeah.
And like, I was obviously at the game with Chloe and she was fucking raging because she went to Fulham and he didn't do it there either. No. Now, I've never really noticed whether he does or he doesn't.
Yeah, I think he does.
But it really pissed a lot of people off the other night. Yeah,
I don't think I've ever, I couldn't tell you. I mean, there's hours of video footage that I have that will be all over vlogs. Someone may be able to tell me, you know, unequivocally on this. But Henderson always goes to the cop.
Yeah.
And Milner always does.
Javi Elliott always does.
And
as
Robbo,
well.
Yeah, of course he does.
He goes to every individual
best on the front row. He's got a bag of shirts. I just hand them out to everyone as he goes. But like, yeah, like Trent does, and you know, but it's and your proximity to the fans. Virgil will, but I don't. Yeah, it never stands out to me as him being someone who regularly does that. Whatever.
I think it's a bit different when you're losing games of football and you're playing terrible, and your away fans have paid loads of money and sung their hearts out all fucking night. To show a little bit of respect.
Look, Virgil's dead, done in. You could see him how embarrassed he was that Milner was bollocking him. He was like, yeah, like, you know, like, I know, I kind of know, but I don't know whether he's got something going on at the minute. It just feels like that. Like, everything feels on top.
He just looks lackadaisical to me at the moment. And, you know, I've said this upstairs in the office, and I don't know whether it's true, but it's a theory regardless. It's like, it's like what got him to become the best defender in the world is like standing off. And now he believes that's the only way to defend almost. And it's like, I wasn't as arsed about where he was for the goal as what he did with Rashford beforehand, to be quite honest, in the phase of play before. Because he just walked up to Rashford and Rashford just played the ball back to Bruno Fernandes and whipped the ball into the box. I'm like, stop that. Stop that. Like, do something with that. Like, and then you get back into position. You're caught between a rock and a hard place. He doesn't know where the goal is. I understand that. I want him to come out and rush, but equally I've seen loads of balls hit his leg and go wide.
You come out and rush, that's what happened. Look what happened to James Milner. We said this about him last week with the Zaha goal. If Virgil van Dijk throws himself to the floor, I'm sorry, it's like... I've been a goalkeeper against the penalty taker that's just really, really good at footy. If you give them any inkling, their ability in small spaces around the football means that you give any body movement anyway ahead of time, they're going to put it in the other corner because that's how good they are. Sancho showed why you don't throw yourself in, because you create panic when you start throwing yourself in, and a really good footballer lives for them, but they come alive in their moments. Like he's been doing, Jadon Sancho's been doing that to people since he was 5 years old. People are desperate to tackle him, so they're throwing everything at him, left, right and centre, and he'll just dance around them and stick it in. But Virgil should just be another closer. Foot closer to him. You're narrowing the angle down. You're reducing the space that he's got to actually hit. It is unmissable. It's an unmissable chance because Virgil's not close enough.
I completely agree with you. This has done my head in for a few years now, is when this is all happening, Virgil's putting his hands behind his back. And I'm like, no, get closer. Get closer. Don't worry about fucking hands behind your back shit. Well, just go and get the ball.
Well, yeah, I know. But the hands behind the back, and that's what's been laughed at, but like, you've got to, because if he puts his hands out, if his hands are just even normally by his side, they give penalties for all kinds of shite, don't they? So that's been 3 or 4 year process of defenders changing.
They do, and I disagree with it. I just don't think they should. I think they should get themselves balanced better. Yeah. You know, and unfortunately, to balance and to get yourself into a better position, you do need to put your arms out a little bit.
The thing about it is, it's all, if he's a foot closer, what he does is right. Because he sticks his leg out, he goes the right way to block it, but he's not close enough to narrow the angle down. If he's a foot closer, it hits his knee and probably goes wide, but he does just... He's getting the things wrong.
Let me just finish my point. On the arms behind the back, if you're crossing the ball and someone's got an arm behind the back, what do you know they're doing? Trying to block?
Yeah.
They're not going to tackle. It's a fucking giveaway for a start. It is. Nobody goes for a tackle like that because you can't.
Yeah.
Just put the arms behind your back and feel the position on your shoulders. Yeah. You just can't do it. So you're telling them that you're going to stand still. Yeah. And that's a fucking really bad thing on a football field where these lads can control the ball as well as they do.
It does, but then
can you get your leg out anywhere near as high and as easily with your arms behind your back as with an arm?
True.
No, you can't. But, you can't do any of that. So if you're stood there, nowhere near play with your arms behind your back, he knows he can knock it into the bottom corner.
I disagree on the point on the Virgil thing, because I think that how good he is he's telling Sancho, look at all the space you can put it in, but I know that I can get to it. But the point is, he can't because his positioning's wrong. He's fine. Put your arms behind your back all day. Virgil reaches out. He does get a fucking great whole distance with that leg. That's his tactic for doing it.
He doesn't. He gets about a foot. He lifts his leg up slightly and gets about a foot away.
Yeah, he does.
And think about how many times you've seen crosses when the lads are there and they're just inside the penalty area and they just turn back on them and cross the ball in with the left foot instead. Because you're telling them that's all you're going to do. Yeah. You've got to give them a reason to think you could do anything.
Yeah.
And that's when they get in their own head.
But the thing with Virgil, the penalty of Fulham's in his head, I think. And I think that's one of the major issues there, because he's been done like a kipper by Mitrovic. And that we then saw that again, I think, against Crystal Palace. I think he's doubling down on not engaging. And I don't think that's what we need right now. We could do with him being a little bit more, doing a bit more defending, doing a bit more active defending. Okay. But then, of course, what will happen is he'll do that and, you know, someone will play that and then it'll be the wrong decision. Sometimes there's nothing wrong with just, you've just got to kind of ride it out. And it doesn't feel very nice for us to say, because we've got this adage around our head of repeating the same process and expecting different results is madness, all that kind of stuff. But there are also cases where sometimes you just have to trust the process and you've got to stick with what you're
I think what he's doing there is, I think he thinks he's covered that near post off. Yeah. And I don't think that's something that, I think that's something goalkeepers have a lot better.
Goal, he's got to cover because he doesn't know Alisson.
Well, Alisson's dived because Milner's thrown himself in, which is hence the panic thing that you mentioned before. Yeah. When someone throws the body on the line like that, the keeper's got to go. Because the panic set in with them. But goalkeepers are brilliant at knowing where the goal is. And as a centre-half, I don't think it's quite as easy. And you know, he's in the wrong position, full stop.
I don't think Milner's been forced to do that, because that's why he's berating Virgil van Dijk, because he's like...
Well, he's trying to show.
He's trying to do that. So I think that's good of him, but he shouldn't be in that position where he has to do so. But also, on the flip side, I get it creates panic. But Martinez did it at the other end and blocked the ball.
Yeah. No, look, again, it's fine. You know, again, there's times and places for it, but... If there's tackle, he's not close enough to Sancho to do that.
Yeah.
He's literally just trying to block a shot. Yeah. That's like diving. You know what I mean? Like diving to save a shot is what he's done there. It's not a block tackle in the same way. But in doing that, you're right. Milner's done that to make a point, because because Trent's not running. Because Trent should be blocking the post as well. If Trent actually just continues his sprint the whole way,
mate, he could have walked there.
Yeah, genuinely. and so Milner's forced to be like, what Milner is at this point now, you know, it's
firefighter.
All, yeah, exactly. It's all experience now from James Milner. He's not, you know, his better days are behind him as a footballer, but his desire and his willingness to work and his want to, he knows what he wants to be doing. I bet he wishes he could swap bodies with Trent Alexander-Arnold right now. And he's like, you know, like the career I'd have if I had what you've got right now. It's one of those things, isn't it? But he's tried to make a point to Virgil and probably to Trent.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And, but in doing so, he's gone to fucking far. He should just really just, but he, yeah, he's again over conversation, whatever, shite. Yeah, I do think
though that he buys the rest of the lads' time, and that's the other thing. You know, because Sancho, if he doesn't, Sancho does shoot. Now you say, does Alisson save it? Who knows? But you've got, if someone goes down like that, the other lad should be thinking he's cutting back.
But also, yeah, he's on his right foot. If Milner doesn't go to ground like that, so Sancho is probably forced to take the shot on his right foot into that corner where Alisson's diving, and Alisson maybe saves it. Milner doing that gives Sancho no choice but to come back.
Exactly.
Into the open,
exactly my point. Yeah. He comes back to two lads who should be there, but they're not.
But they're not, so Milner's fourth done the wrong thing because they're not there.
No, the two lads have done the wrong thing because they're not there, because they've seen what James Milner's done.
But they're not there, so Milner's done the wrong thing.
No, because you're forcing one to the other.
But if Milner doesn't do that, you're berating Milner for not doing anything.
Oh, no, I'm not saying Milner does nothing.
No,
I'm just saying, you know, but again, we're talking around in circles on this. You know, it's a chicken and egg. Milner, it goes back to, is Milner trying to prove a point to them? Because by basically, he's just shepherded Jadon Sancho into an open part of the goal. We can debate whether Trent should be there and Virgil van Dijk should be a yard further forward, but they're not. So he's effectively shepherded Sancho into the easiest way to finish the strike. Again, it doesn't fucking matter, they're all shite. Couple of super chats before we take a quick break. Connor, been a member for 26 months, says, win, lose or draw, you'll never walk alone. Absolutely, mate. Rabadam says, is the right midfielder available yet? We'll definitely chat about that in a sec. Josh Owens says, groundwork has cut through the electric cable at work, so got sent home. On the bright side, I can watch the podcast live for a change.
Hey! Did you do something naughty?
That's not being naughty, you're fine. Did you do it?
Yeah.
Did you cut through the cable? And Rachel Todd says, RIP Olivia, absolutely. Right, okay, short break, and then we're going to talk about what the hell Liverpool do next.
Hey guys, it's nearly the end of August, which means we will soon be doing our Club Legend prize draw. This month's prize is this amazing framed, signed, shared by none other than Liverpool's European Cup winning captain, Mr. Phil Thompson. If you want to be involved in this prize draw, all you got to do is be a Club Legend subscriber on Red Men Plus. If you've never been over to Red Men Plus before, do check it out. Sign up for Club Legend. You'll get access to our Discord chat. You get free merch, you get discounted merch, and of course, entry into this competition. If you're a Club Captain over on Red Men Plus, do upgrade to Club Legend and you too will be in the prize draw. Time is running out, so go and do it. Go and do it now.
Hey, welcome back. Yeah, I mentioned before, got a great competition prize if you want to win a signed Phil Thompson 77 European Cup shirt, then join as a club legend on Redmen Plus. One of the reasons why I mention it, and I've seen a few people who've joined up in the last week, social media is so horrifically toxic during the transfer window and doubly so when Liverpool aren't winning football matches. We've got a wonderful, wonderful community of people over on our Discord, our club legend Discord, so if you want to join in with all those people, then yeah, if you become a club legend, you get entered into that competition prize, but you also get to join a wonderful community of like-minded, sensible, and look, not to say like...
And you can be in a Redmen show.
And you can even be in your own show. Yeah, the club legends have got their own show on Redmen Plus as well. So yeah, plenty of perks. But yeah, really at the moment, it's nice to just have a little gang of dead sound people and you can just have a chat with and get some of your fears and stuff out the way. They've been a massive help to us. And also, what I found is a really great useful tool is actually just like doing prep for shows and having conversations around things. So yeah, it's boss. It's really good. So yeah, if you go to redmenplus.com and join up, you can become a club legend, get in the Discord, get on a show and get entered into boss competitions and get free merchandise as well. Loads of extra perks as well as all the boss content. Yeah, big week looming, because the way I described it was there's a huge call to be made from Liverpool this week. They're either going to buy someone or they're not going to buy someone. Mm-hmm. Either way, it's a huge call. I'm leaning increasingly more towards the case of I can't see how they can't go into the transfer market here. But, you know, for all the mutterings, all the talk is that, and yet, you know, Jürgen Klopp made a big point about it of like, it's just not how Liverpool do things. You know, we get set our budgets, we work to our budgets, and we live with our budgets. It would be, if they're going to do something, it would be a bit of an Liverpool move, I think, to make a big move for a player between now and the end of the transfer window. Because of all this talk of it's got to be the right player. I can't imagine how the right player is available with 4 days or 5 days left of the transfer window. Not that you couldn't physically offer the money for it, but what we never consider is what happens next. What do the club do? And, you know, if it's like Coutinho. Liverpool should have sold Coutinho to Barcelona because he didn't want to play for us. He wants to play for Barcelona. But Liverpool refused to sell Coutinho because there was no one they felt they could spend the money on in September or August that made it a worthwhile move.
Yeah, I mean, it is on Liverpool, but 2 years ago we did it, you know, when we did the centre halves. Now, the problem, I think, for Klopp is I think it was 10 days after he came out and started talking about needing centre-halves that we get through Ben Davies and Ozan Kabak. Now, the problem we've got is that was a really failed experiment in some ways, because Ozan Kabak wasn't good enough to sign and Ben Davies didn't play. So there's proof, if you need it, of it's got to be the right type of players. Jürgen essentially used those two moves, I believe, to wait to get Konate, mm-hmm. which was his number one target for the centre-back position. Could we see something similar again? I'd be really shocked if we did. I can't imagine us getting a loan deal in for a full season at this point. Which then leads me to the only option that might work is a signing. And if they've already told me that they know who they like and the players that they like aren't available, then that makes you think that they're not going to sign anybody because they're not going to buy the wrong player or a risky player. That being said, I would absolutely fucking sign somebody to play in the middle of the park for us.
Yeah, I completely agree on that. And there's a couple of names which we'll come to in a second, the potentials. But because my point forever on this is that where I came down on this was at post-match, was you're not at the moment. What Liverpool need to buy is better than Thiago. They need to buy Thiago, but at Thiago, he can play 50 games a season. Or they need to buy an upgrade on prime Jordan Henderson, someone who can play loads of games but can play a six, can play an eight, and has got a good range of passing or whatever in them, like a brilliant engine. When everyone's fit, you need that. At the moment, we need to buy someone who's better than James Milner and Harvey Elliott, which I think is a much easier thing to do.
And Keita and Ox.
Sure. But not at the moment, because they're both injured. You know, we need to, because they're
for right now.
Yeah, for right now, we need to buy someone who's better than James Milner, really, to come into that team. But their point is, in 2 or 3 weeks' time, you might not, because Milner will go back to what he is in the squad, and that's a lad who plays
5 minutes at the end of football matches and a couple of games at right back in the cup. So I appreciate the awkwardness of it. If we really want someone good, though, they've got to be, for me, if our team is built around Thiago, we need to buy another Thiago. Who the fuck's another Thiago is my concern.
All summer, I've been all right with the, we've got eight midfielders, so it'll be fine, and I've banged on about five subs all summer. So those players that we all thought were going to be injured at some point won't get injured at the same time. We've got five subs, so we can help manage the minutes, and even some of the Fabinho, Henderson, maybe even James Milner to an extent, all get injured at some point. I thought it would be fine. But I think people are just getting to the point now where they just don't want to be in the same position in a couple of months' time of being in the same situation if we don't buy someone. I also understand that you probably have to get rid of a Naby Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain before you bring someone else in, because if you don't sell those players, then they're just sat there doing nothing, which is the case anyway because they're both injured. But the harder to get off the books, you sell them for cheaper money or whatever else. But I made the point on the final word. What happens next summer? Naby won't get a new contract. Ox won't get a new contract. James Milner might retire. Jordan Henderson's a year older. So do you need someone who's better than Thiago and better than Fabinho? Yes, probably. But you could argue the case for both, because in 12 months' time, you're going to need three midfielders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's where it feels a little odd that we've not bought another one in this summer.
My big concern at the moment is probably more around, you know, I think a lot of people are looking for short-term gain over long-term game. I think Liverpool might focus a little too much on long-term game, if I'm being perfectly honest with you.
We've bought long-term.
Yeah.
In Carvalho and Elliott, and Jones, where people think of it, we've medium, got our long-term.
Medium to long, then. I think, you know, what Liverpool needs to do is stop wasting seasons where this team is capable of winning league titles.
Yeah.
You know, we saw that 2 years ago. We look like we could be heading for another one of them now. You know, you don't know how well the team gels, the next evolution of the team. I think it's easy sometimes to go, right, we've got to make sure that we're all right for the next 5 years. Brilliant, I get that. You've got to win now.
Yeah.
Because winning now is what keeps you in the job to be able to win in 5 years' time or to be able to keep the players at your football club. Because if you don't win now, you drop out of Champions League to keep the players. Yeah. There's Mo Salah hanging around with no Champions League. Does anyone actually think that? And I don't think Liverpool aren't going to get Champions League. What I'm saying is focus on now as well.
Yeah.
Because quite easily time fucking flies by and you're gone.
The problem is that when you've had a system that worked, because the thing with this is your point is sound, but it's one of those points that you hear shouted a lot. When I don't think it, and I'm not saying you don't take this into consideration because I know you do, but it doesn't, it very rarely accounts for, it's like Klopp said, didn't he? He's like, well, look, the way we do it has got us to where we are. We can't say any other approach would have given us more or less. It stands to logical reason that when you add more footballers, it gives you a better chance of doing more and more things. But it feels like how we do things is run on such fucking fine margins. Like we always have to be right on the ragged edge of everything. And if we get we can get the occasional transfer wrong, but if we start getting multiple transfers wrong, then it fucks the whole enterprise. And so that's why I'm understanding of the fears about spunking loads of money on lads unless they know. There's a reason we buy Thiago instead of buying the next Thiago, is because, you know, they've taken a gamble on it on the original and best. But it feels mad. It feels very, very, because again, I just can't fault the base logic of this. Because if we bought another centre half in COVID season in the summer, where we all said we were a centre half short, that would have maybe seen us through. But nobody knows what that centre half was.
It could have been Kabak. And then we couldn't get Konate. Exactly. And that's the problem that we've got, because it is shoestring, but tight. Mm-hmm. They don't have that ability to make mistakes. And I understand that, but you've got, like, as I say, you've got to win now. Because if you don't, it harms the long term even more.
Yeah. I don't know. I hate feeling like I have to go to bat for. This is why people think I'm in the fucking ownership pocket.
But going into a season when Thiago is the crux of what you're trying to do, and not having a ready made replacement, and what I mean is we've got lads who are 10 years younger than him, but they're not ready made to go if he's injured. That seems a little bit nuts to me.
Well, Naby Keita's there, isn't he? And again, without going away to Naby Keita, last season we balanced them both pretty well. As that, Naby's the first understudy for the midfield, and he's most available he's been for Liverpool in his entire Liverpool career, and the same goes with Jordan Henderson on the other side. So I can appreciate that they've not gone. It isn't all on Thiago, is it? They feel that between Thiago and Naby.
If you asked 100 Liverpool fans, would you give Naby Keita a new contract? Half of them would say yes, and half would say no, roughly speaking. Mm-hmm. Which tells me that actually he's probably not an adequate replacement for Thiago. Because half the lads think he's not very good and half think he's all right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think if you'd said to Liverpool fans, if you're going to give Salah a contract, 99% of those Liverpool fans would say yeah, because Salah's quite clearly having a huge impact single week
but
on
what
Liverpool.
But what does that mean?
So that means that I don't think we did have a ready-made replacement for Thiago if he goes out, because Naby Keita's a good player and I like him when he's in the side and he has got thingy, but he hasn't had a good Liverpool career. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone would suggest that he has, to be honest with you. I don't think he's been, like, when he runs games of football, he has good games, as they all do, but he doesn't run the game like Thiago does. He doesn't see things that nobody else can see on the football field. And when you are changing to try and thread the balls through to the strikers, and Trent's changed his position, Robert, you need those clever players who are going to run the game, who are going to be able to take the game by the scruff of the neck. Kate is not a game by the scruff of the neck kind of player. Mm-hmm. And maybe Harvey Elliott is, and maybe Carvalho becomes that as well. I don't know, but like for me, it's not just, he's a completely different style for a start, Keita to Thiago.
Can I just ask, just to move this on though, is this for or against what Liverpool's process is for buying a midfielder?
Both. Because you can't get a Thiago, which means you needed to do it 2 years ago.
But we bought him 2 years ago.
Yeah, but you need to have his next one ready as well. And that's what Liverpool are trying to do. They're trying to balance the short and the long.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've put enough on the short right now.
Yeah. On that, just go back to my point before. Say we wait and we go for Jude Bellingham next season, next summer. What's that, £100 million? And Keita doesn't sign a contract and Oxlade-Chamberlain leaves and James Milner retires. Then what? Then you still need people to replace, you know, Keita's quality and then... Whatever spend £200 million for midfielders.
Trying to define where Liverpool's midfield is in a year is the path to madness, because there's too many unknowns over all of that. So I don't know. I can't tell you what Elliot looks like after a season of first team football.
Yeah, but I think the same answer, but there won't be here next season. You can say won't be here to the point you're trying.
Oh
to
no, no, without a doubt. But our concerns are over the fitness and availability of our first team midfielders, who are all in the region of 30 years old. But what I'm saying is Liverpool have clearly bought Harvey Elliott with a position in mind. They've bought Carvalho with a position in mind. They've kept Curtis Jones on. I mean, when it looks like he probably could have done with a Premier League loan, they clearly think there's something in there. There's no way Steven Gerrard wouldn't have bitten your hand off for a year of Curtis Jones on loan if he was going, which might have helped his development. So let's, and again, if we're in a hypothetical world where you've brought Jude Bellingham in, well, the idea is that he should be a 50 game a season player. So therefore, you've got him, Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, Elliot, Carvalho, who are all, you've got a few who are injury prone, but you've got a couple more lads who are potentially still 50, who are now 50 game a season players on top. It's probably less of a pressing issue in that regard, because this is why you buy a player who's better than what you've got. Because the thing about buying Bellingham is he just reduces Thiago's time on the pitch. That's what you want, and that's where we're between the devil and the deep blue sea is. When, and people go, well, we wanted Tchouaméni and didn't get him, so why we've not gone for someone? Because, and I don't know enough about how he plays or whatever, but if you're going to replace Henderson, Fabinho or Thiago, then they need to be as good as football as they are, or better, because maybe we need more goals from midfield as well. I think we'd all agree that. So you've got to do that, but you've got to be 10 goals a season as well. Fucking hell. There's your margins of your pools are getting shallower and shallower. They've got to be able to withstand the physical regime of being under Klopp, but also playing in the Premier League on top, shorter, 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 shorter. And then while you're doing this as well, every other football club on the planet wants this player. So value goes bigger, bigger, bigger. And the less there are, the more valuable something becomes. So this is why we end up with, and again, it's why you wait for Alisson, you wait for Van Dijk, you wait for Konate, and you go for Thiago, is because the talent costs a fucking lot of money. The question, but again, this is what we boil down to. I don't think it's possible to buy. It might be. Someone might be able to do this, but you need to get that transfer right. That needs to be you need to get one of your midfielders right. You might be able to fudge it on one or two others. But the more you fudge it, the more you end up with fucking
laughing. We're going to need to spend, to be better than Jordan Henderson, to be better than James Milner, to be better than Harvey Elliott, you need to spend 50 million quid. Like, when Anthony Gordon's probably not getting better than any of them and is going for 45, 50, 60 million, whatever it is, that's not a small chunk of change, is it? So to do that, to get someone who's just a bit better or maybe on the level of the others, you've spent half your Bellingham money.
Yeah.
And that's the quandary that Liverpool are in right now, that it's so expensive. That 100 million for Bellingham looks cheap, be quite honest with you.
My big issue with all of this, though, by the way, is when we're sat here defending the budget, Liverpool have spent fuck all for years. We've had our net spend has been pretty nominal in Klopp's time. I think it's like, what, 150 million over 7 years or something like that, which is madness. This doesn't take into account, by the way, how our wage bill's grown, which no one ever talks about, because I would suspect our wage bill's doubled in that time,
yeah.
Which is hundreds
of probably
million.
Close to 300%.
Yeah, it's hundreds and hundreds of millions, you know, more every year, which is obviously a factor. So it's not like we're tight, but there, it would be nice to have a summer where we do go, where we spend well above what we bring in, you know. So there is 50 million or 80 million on top of what we've brought in. The occasional summer doing that is how you do, I think, kick on a little bit, or you've got to continue to find gems or whatever. But
and the issue with that is other teams are doing it. You know, Arsenal, I've spent a lot of money in the past two or three seasons.
They're getting investigated now.
They're
on UEFA's hit list, aren't they? Yeah. FIFA's, I can't remember.
There's a couple of Premier League clubs that are in there, but to the point that they're getting better, they're improving. So therefore, when you play them, it becomes harder when you play midfield like that. When you come against Arsenal, yeah. Tottenham are the same. Chelsea are a bit hit and miss, but there's other clubs within the league that are improving and getting better. Newcastle showed that you can give Man City a game.
Every football club owns injury-prone footballers, you know what I mean?
And they'll all get them when we're playing two games a week for the next 3 months.
Yeah, but I mean, just to play devil's advocate on it, you know, and again, this idea of us owning loads. Look, every one of those other football teams is still playing catch up with Liverpool and City. So, you know, and it's much easier to do that. And that's why it's easy for Man United to win that game on Monday with all the extenuating circumstances around it, because they're just trying to engineer a win against Liverpool. Liverpool don't engineer wins against football teams. Liverpool have a style that can beat everyone. And that's where they're at. Whereas all these teams are now where we were at in the first season or two under Klopp, where we could every other week we could go, right, fuck it, we're going to Man City away, we're going to go to 4-3-3 for this game, we're going to play Roberto Firmino in a false nine. What the fuck is he doing?
Walk away 4-1 winners or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly.
I said this, Man United will lose next week.
Or they'll draw. And then they'll win a couple and then they'll lose a couple.
So where are we on who's signing the midfielder in this window?
What do you mean?
Are you signing a midfielder in this window?
Because they're not being clear on return dates for footballers, I am worried that there's some of them are out for a lot longer than we do. Because normally it's 2 weeks and they'll be back. You know what I mean? They'd be quite flippant about it. I look at who's around, who's potentially available for a transfer this summer, and that is Frenkie de Jong, Youri Tielemans, James Maddison. People might be able to throw a couple of names out there.
Tielemans' price has just gone down to about 15 million as well.
I mean, I see a lot of people going, "Oh, he's not good enough." I've not watched enough of him, but when I was paying attention to him a year or so ago, I thought he was quite impressive. I think Leicester have turned shit, which I don't think helps their whole enterprise.
Is he better than Ox?
But Ox is our ninth choice midfielder. I don't think it is, again, just to go back to the awkwardness of it all. Does Youri Tielemans want to come in and be Liverpool's eighth or ninth choice midfielder?
That's the attitude that you won't be.
No, I know, boss, but that's fucking great. But
you've got an opportunity, though. You have got an opportunity to get yourself into the side.
Maybe.
You have
for the next fucking 2 weeks.
Yeah, but we don't know how long. Yeah, exactly. That's the point,
again,
isn't it?
Playing two games a week, you have five subs, you have, there's so much football to play.
Yeah. And you can get yourself, if you can get yourself above Ox in the squads, and you know, you get an opportunity. So
and
season
then, again, going to next season, if Milner goes, if Keita goes, well, there's two places that you can go. No, it'd be worth it.
I'm 100% signing someone this window.
Yeah,
and I'll leave it up to them.
I agree. No, but you know, again, hopefully there's players outside of that little bubble. Because again,
Barella's been linked quite a lot as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's fucking fanciful. That I think that's just a yeah, because Klopp said something nice about him once, and it just
good about Nunes. We bought him, Paul.
Yeah, that's true. People trawling through the list of footballers that Klopp's once name dropped in a press conference, but there's players there. I don't know whether they fit. I don't know whether James Maddison could play in a Liverpool midfield. I mean, he'll get a game because we're so short of footballers. I don't know where he plays in the midfield today. I'd have gone for Christian Eriksen in the summer as well. But also, and I guarantee there's a lot of people who are like, we should have gone midfield, we should have got Christian Eriksen. The man was literally dead a year ago. And we're concerned about the fitness of Naby Keita and fucking Oxlade-Chamberlain. Like, fuck me. You know what I mean? So on the balance of fucking risk, one of the stupidest decisions Liverpool could have made.
And ironically, poor Genie's just broke his leg. He's the one that always the throwback, wasn't it?
But again, which I think gives you an idea of the difficulties of all of this stuff. You know, we're just in a mad spell of getting injuries. The fear is you do what we did when we brought the defenders in, and they both got fucking injured as well.
The thing is, though, I think if what I like is if you sign someone, they haven't gone through our pre-season, so they're less likely to get injured. Because that's the one thing that all of our lads have got in common here, Paul. They played for us last season, and they went through pre-season.
They went for a fucking quadruple last year. They're all mentally and physically.
Yeah,
you
might
dead.
Need someone who's just played less games. Is that just the answer?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe that's that. But like the young thing is very much like Saul Niguez last summer, where he's brilliant by all accounts. I don't watch him week in, week out. The little bits I've seen him, I think he'd be perfect for Liverpool's midfield. But what does he earn a week? Yeah. You know, are you bringing in? Are we
nothing, Paul De Jong?
By all accounts. Is he 300 grand a week footballer? Probably, because that's where it is. Whether he's getting paid that or not,
imagine
that's
fucking
his contract
trying to
says.
Run Liverpool Football Club, man. It would be so goddamn difficult, wouldn't it? I mean, like, just the wages is just astronomical, and it's getting worse every year. You know, you're almost like you're spinning your wheels commercially just to feed the team, essentially, each and every week. And then you've got to think about £100 million for players and stuff like that. I don't know how they do it, to be honest with you, because I think you need to be a rocket scientist just to balance the books of a football club, never mind to get into the analytics and all the work behind the scenes that they do. It's absolutely scandalous, and we just sit here and go, let's just sign a midfielder.
No, exactly.
Let's just sign a midfielder, lads, you know what I mean?
This is the thing about this all, is that we're the only team that's come close to stopping Man City, come close, and we've done it this way. Every football club is trying to copy our model, by the way, all these other ones. They're going two ways. They're either trying to find a sheikh or an oil state to pay bottomless money towards it, or they're trying to find a self-sustaining business model like Liverpool have got. Liverpool are the absolute fucking idol of all these other football clubs because of how they've managed to do it. The problem is that it might not work forever. Mm. And being at the top is a lot harder than getting the chase, because you've got the margin for error. You get to write it off. Oh, well, never mind. You get to get caught up in the exciting top four battle instead of this inexorable, miserable battle for second, where you're expected to win the league, but it might not be possible because it just...
All football clubs, let's not forget this, are supposed to spend what they've earned. Liverpool are spending what they're earning.
Yeah.
You know, they're spending 90% or 80% of it is on the wages of the first team lads. Yeah. You know, and that's they're the lads that you have to pay, unfortunately. And FSG aren't taking money out of the club, as far as I'm aware. If anyone can tell me differently, tell me now, because...
Give him a ring.
I wish I had his number. I'd be asking for a midfielder. But like, so we're being ran really, really, really well. We just want a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's it. Look, I'm greedy. Fuck's sake, look at me. I just want one more. I just want seconds. You know what I mean? I just want another pudding. It's fine.
It doesn't help that, like, you know, City started the season reasonably well. We just lost to Manchester United. So it now feels like Man United are fixed and Liverpool are fucked, because that's just how it feels whenever you have those games. Like, it's an all-deciding fixture or whatever. Arsenal are getting themselves back together again. Ultimately, it'll all shake out and Liverpool will probably finish in the top two this season. Again, barring an even further deepening injury crisis. But it goes back to this point. The next three games for Liverpool are fucking huge.
I'd say this weekend must win.
Yeah, absolutely. Bournemouth, Newcastle, Everton. By the time Everton comes around, at least Darwin Nunes will be back. And it's, can we get anyone else back? And moreover, can the lads who are still around and available, can they dig us out the... that dig us out the shit? Can we do something in these next couple of games just to get a couple of wins on the board? It's for the psychological side of it as much as ever. And can Liverpool find a player of suitable quality that fits what they're doing in the transfer window?
Just one more quick point on what I was thinking earlier and I forgot to mention. There is a psychological thing to when you are in the weeds, essentially, and you're seeing people drop like flies. Like, just a body might just help give everybody a little bit of a lift at this point, because like I think they're sort of like, oh, fucking hell, we're just losing men over and over again.
But this is the point, it's got to be a good body, because you walk into the AXA and they go, hey, wow, hey, you're great, aren't you? And then they pass the ball to him.
And they do what the legends did with me.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? We've made a sub, but we've passed the ball to him. We're not passing the ball to him again. Exactly. Of course, it has to be a good body.
We say it goes without saying, but it does have to be said, because this notion
not
of
to
like,
people in the football club.
No. Not yet, exactly. Not to within, but from people outside the football club. It's like, you're right, are you going to get one more in? Gives everyone a lift. You bring them in and they're fucking rubbish at the job. Then...
You don't want to become Man United or Everton, where you just sign a midfielder, shout, it's just buy anyone, give them loads of wages and the shite, yeah, and then you stop.
Well, that's just this is my whole point, is that's how you start to bring the house of cards down, because if you've got a lad who's on ridiculous wages and he's not good enough, then you need to improve. You then reach to the pot and the pot's empty because the pot's being pissed away on some guy who's not even good enough to get in your team, and then, you know, again, you're right, and we say, can you buy someone better than Ox? The disrespect on Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain at times, I think, is absolutely fucking shocking. He's good enough to play in Liverpool's midfield, and he's good enough to play in the front three. And I don't mean week in, week out. I just mean that you can play him in the midfield and he doesn't cost you games of football. In fact, he can help you win games of football. I think that gets undersold sometimes, as to how good that level actually is.
I think a lot of it is his availability. I know last
season. We're done. But that's the thing, is that just the final point on all this is that, yeah,
we've let him finish his point. Come on,
it's the same point we've been making. No, it's not.
But if he played, he was involved in 32 games last season. He was on the bench for a whole lot more. But then he's injured again, and he's just a victim of everything you just said there. When you don't win games of football, we play crap. And you're pointing fingers at people. I think he's one that gets it. But I think that you can improve on him. That's not.
No, you can't.
That doesn't mean you can't. Of course, that's not slagging him off.
You can improve on every footballer. Yeah. But my point I'm making is generally we've got this wide ranging disrespect towards a lot of our footballers for some fucking mad reason. None of us really can gauge how good these lads are anymore, because we've got some of the best in the world. Everyone else falls a little bit short. There's, again, what you this want is your squad players are really capable of performing.
I think sometimes we do that. Do. Just to bring the tone down slightly. Yeah, sure. Lovely. But a rising tide kind of floats all boats, doesn't it? And I think you can bring a player into Liverpool and they can improve as well, and they can look better than they did for another football club. It's picking that player, isn't it? You know, that's the difficulty. It's why Michael Edwards is so revered at Liverpool, or was so revered at Liverpool, is because he could pick the right player and that would improve. And Jürgen's a great coach, and we've got great coaches around him. It's not a, by any means, quick process. I think that's the one thing that I think that we as fans get completely wrong, is I think we're talking 18 months minimum on looking at a player before we sign them, but probably closer to around about the 2-year mark. And that's when you make the mistakes. If you start to speed up that timeline and you don't do your due diligence and you don't see everything that you
and
need to see.
How often are we linked with players and we go, God, we should definitely go and get him. And then you don't, and everyone goes, oh, I can't believe we didn't get him. And they never go on to do anything better than the level that Liverpool.
Timo Werner is a really a great example of someone who, if 40 million, it seemed like an absolute bargain and a complete no-brainer, and yet Liverpool just weren't there for him after being linked for 2 years.
What's Nabil Fekir done?
The graveyard's littered with players that Liverpool didn't sign, and not many of them go on to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the other issue Liverpool got now is, it's like going to a fucking car every 5 minutes before it closes. You just left with fucking scraps and shite that you don't want. Mm-hmm. Because to your point, if there is someone who's actually out there who's starting games in midfield for a quality side, they're not selling them a week before the window shuts.
Yeah, and look, and this is what I'm seeing. It's very easy for us to go, fucking just sort it out, Liverpool. Go and get it. Go and bully people. Go and do whatever. Yeah, cool. You know, be brilliant. Someone needs to go and be brilliant at their job here this week. Brilliant. Like, outside the box, fucking exceptional. If they're going to get something done. But again, that's what it boils down to. They'll go, if we can do that, great. If we can't, then they will shrug their shoulders and get on with it. And there's no better manager, and coaching team and club to just get on and deal with making the best of the situation that they're facing, because we've been doing that for 7 years now, yeah. And it's actually yielded a lot of really good results. And again, I can't fault that logic of if only we'd just.
It's the I told you so people that are coming out now, because they said, well, a lot of it, we've all said it all summer. You said it at the start of the show. We all said it throughout the summer, we wanted the midfielder.
Yeah. If I look, yeah.
Liverpool's option for me, honestly, is they go and get the midfielder that they want and they pay over the odds. And I think that might be the safest bet. It's just whether you can actually afford to be able to do that. Like, everybody's got a price. What is the price for this summer for Jude Bellingham? We were very, very nice. We probably had a conversation with you. You told us it wasn't allowed. Right, what's the price and who is available? Because we're paying it.
If Jude Bellingham's price is 200 million?
Buy Ox, buy Naby, buy someone, try and get about 30 million through the door.
Is all these broken biscuits in our pocket, like, you mean, yeah, and 100
what
million.
What does that buy? I can do 100 million.
Do you like this watch?
Yeah, no problem. We'll sell you 25% of our TV revenues over the next many years. Christ, it's fine, yeah. You know what I mean? Get down to Barcelona model. Yes. No, Liverpool either buy the person that they want, or Liverpool don't buy anyone, is where I think, but Liverpool need to buy someone, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if there was a player who's a little bit on the edge of, like, he's probably good enough, but he's somewhere in between. I don't know who that is. You know, again, Ottavio was linked a few weeks ago, but I think that was all agent
for half an hour.
Yeah, but it was all agent talk.
That's like what pretty much Manchester United's transfer strategy all summer, isn't it?
Go and buy Yuri Tielemans. If he's not good enough, there'll be another club in the Premier League who'll take him off your hands.
It's a safe bet, that, isn't it? Yeah.
Jason super chat says, "What's annoying me most is that United will probably go and lose to Southampton on Saturday because they're shocking." Yeah, they will. They're a team that's starting from year zero and building up. They'll have inconsistencies. All these other teams will have inconsistent periods. They just will.
And United won't play like that every week.
They can't.
No. They'll have to take the ball, and exactly. That's when, you know, it's much easier to be a counter-attacking side and win a game than it is to control a game and win a game.
5-0 last season was a decoy, I think, because they were crap leading into that game, and I thought they'd do that, what they did last Monday night, last time, and he just completely fell apart. So I think in people's minds, well, the shit is still shit. We can just turn up and do the same thing again, and it wasn't to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. X Matty, limited competition for VVD. Trent, love them, but looks like they can't be bothered and don't want to graft poison chalice of the success we've had. Interesting. Daniel B, Bellingham is a free signing next summer, isn't he?
Not.
Nope. If Dortmund would take 60 for him now, we should do now. No, he's not, mate. He's got another couple of
2025.
Yeah, he's got 3 years left on his contract. So yeah, he's a £100 million plus footballer. Like, there's no release clause yet.
What FSG should do is just buy Dortmund and sell them to us.
What FSG should do is just tell us exactly
what the plan is. Just let us know. I'll give you, if I can find it, my lucky biscuit wrapper that's somewhere in a stadium in France. And I expect 0.1% of your football club, but insider information.
Rabadam says, maybe there is a terror financing slave owning despot out there for us as well. Yeah, maybe there's one out there for all of us.
Plenty of fish in the sea.
Right, sound. Redman Extra is following this on Redman Plus. So if you want the uncensored, unbroadcastable, on free media version of this podcast, then please do join us over on redmanplus.com. We'll be live streaming that in about 15 minutes or so after the fact, or it'll be there in video or in podcast form after, as are all the other previous ones. Yeah, all the stuff that we can't really say on public forums. So if you like this but you want more, then head over to redmanplus.com. Anyway, that's the podcast. Hopefully Liverpool win a game of fucking football between now
needed
and next
to
one.
Get some of that off my chest. I feel well better for
genuinely. Nice little old Rand Pokes match as well. There's nothing we can do about it, unfortunately. So we need Liverpool, we need the lads to just sort it out. So, you know, the lads will eventually sort it out, and I'm sure it'll be fine, but until then,
just don't lose to Bournemouth.
Just
fucking win.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well,
HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.